coming to you from our new home at DynastyLeagueFootball.com and a DLF family of podcasts. We are the Superflex Super Show. We talk QB values, Superflex strategies, evaluate and debate Superflex trades, plus our own twist on Superflex team management with exercises like Tinderflex, Super Six, and You Are Nuts. So when you're done with this awesome DLF podcast, find us on Twitter at Superflex Show and join us in the discussion of the fastest growing format in all of fantasy football, Superflex, on the Superflex Super Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Trade Addicts Podcast, where the first step is admitting you have a problem. Please welcome your hosts for today's session, Dynasty Outhouse and Ryan Hart.
I am Dynasty Outhouse, and I have a trading problem.
And I'm Brian Haar, and I also have a trading problem.
And I'm Eitan Mosia, and I have a trading problem.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to session 52 of the Trade Addicts Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts. We are mere days away from actually doing this for a full year.
That's days away.
Which, speaking of, next week, I think we're going to do a live show on Monday, right?
Live show, Monday, April 1st.
Book it.
Okay, so you're lying to us.
I am.
I'm not that clever. I'm way too lazy for April Fool's stuff. I hate that crap.
Oh,
I'm going to be honest.
That's right. It is.
I didn't even think about that till you said it. So clearly, no. Or did I think about it?
Right.
No, definitely didn't. Pop the hood. Tell me what you see.
Always, man. Pop the hood.
An amazing intro with an amazing video for
it's
a podcast
that listens.
Is so annoyingly good, it frustrates me. So tell everyone here, if you don't listen to Dynasty Diagnostic, go listen, but give them a little sum up of what your show is.
Hey, man, honestly, a lot of my show was kind of based around what you did with the Trade Addicts. So Trade Addicts have like a really, or seems like to me, has a really strict focus of being trade-based and just everything has to do with the trades. So you guys talk about strategy around trades. You guys talk about specific moves that you guys make. So what I did is I kind of took that concept and then just made it wider Dynasty League. So what Dynasty Diagnostic is it's a strategy session for an individual team. And I think it's interesting because it kind of applies to anybody that's looking to make moves in their league and to just get better at Dynasty overall. What we like to do is bring on a lot of really influential guests around the community and kind of get them to just give us some of their thoughts on any recent news that happened or just any specific advice for any type of Dynasty, really, in the first part of the show. So, I mean, thanks to you, man. If you like the show, I'm really happy about that because what you guys are building here had a lot to do with how I formatted that show.
Aw, that's sweet. Also, notice he said he's had influential guests on his show, and he's had me, and he hasn't had Brian on.
Brian, we actually already have you on the sheet. And I'm not lying to you here. We have you, we have Jesse, we have everyone kind of in my little niche of people that I talk to. We're definitely going to be bringing you guys on the show. Right now, we're actually booked out like 3 months just because I went crazy. I mean, you've seen my show sheets. You know how I really get about stuff. So I've been just pestering the absolute crap out of people, and somehow I'm getting some guys to come on. So next couple of weeks, you'll hear from guys that I'm sure you guys already know.
Yeah, man. The chutzpah you have to just go after these names where it's just like, dude, I would never even think to ask some of these people to come on.
I have no shame. Like if you ignore me, if you make fun of me, if you just have no interest in having to deal with me at all, that's fine. I will literally just go on to the next person. I have zero shame. Zero Fs are given in most circumstances.
Oh, I would huddle in a corner crying with the amount of ignores and no's I would get. Like, who are you? We talked yesterday. Oh, yeah, man.
That's pretty much how it works. In fact, funny story. So there was one particular guest that we're going to come on in, I don't know, three or four weeks. Anyway, so I contacted him, let's say 2 months ago. I contacted him 2 months ago. I said, hey, we'd like to bring you on the show the next couple of months. Please let us know if you're interested. Got no response, but I really wanted this guy. So a month later, I contacted him again, except this guy, this time, I actually had realized that all my profile information had changed because I do that on Twitter, as you can see, my new username and all the rest of it. Apparently that worked, and he said he was interested, and I tried to set up a date, and that didn't work. So I contacted him one more time. And then this time was after some of the guests that we've had recently, like Josh and Davis Matic. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, by the way, just name drop. We had these guys on the show. Would you be interested now? And that seemed to work. So hey, I mean, I just kind of keep trying. And again, no F's given at all. And I will use whatever I can use. I don't care.
Wow. All right. Well, again. Awesome show. Again. So words are failing me at how annoyed I am, how good your show is. So smart.
Thank Gabe.
Oh, well, add FF Man Bun for those
bars.
What are those words the kids say to mean awesome these days?
Don't they still use awesome? I don't know, man. I haven't made it in a long time either.
You're the young one here.
Yeah, but what is young, really? I mean, like, I'm an old soul. I was 35 years old when I was 13, so, I mean, now I don't even know where I'm at.
It's funny, when you talk to Sipes, Mike Sipes at FF Blitz, he says, you're only as old as you feel, so he feels like he's 20. I'm like, that's funny. You know, I'm as old as I feel, so I guess I'm 50.
Yeah, I'm up there, man. I'm living in a retirement home in my head.
Okay, well... What is, you didn't even actually, like, we jumped straight into your podcast. Tell everyone who you are and what you do now besides the Dynasty Diagnostic podcast.
Absolutely. I just kind of focus on Dynasty Leagues. I was taking from the community for a long time, last couple of years or so, just taking in all the information I could and just really had an itch to kind of contribute myself. So now what I do is I write with Fantrax. You can find all kinds of Dynasty League articles on Fantrax. Basically, if it's on Fantrax HQ and it's Dynasty, chances are that I did write it. And then I've also been writing reports, basically just a single team analysis, kind of the same thing I do on the show, just in more depth for anybody that's interested. But yeah, I've just found, you know, little ways to try and give back to a lot of guys who gave me a lot of information when I didn't really have the time to put into it a few years ago.
All right, and now the question that is burning on probably only my brain and no one else's. What made you sell out and go away from FF underscore Wonder Kid?
What made me sell out and go away from FF underscore Wonder Kid? Well, I mean, I was never attached to it. Honestly, I've done this like a few times at this point, and I'm liable to do it again. I mean, I might just be Cricket from now on. I might just change my... a picture to Jiminy and just go at that for the rest of the time. But I just like to keep it fresh. You know, I was just trying to go somewhere a little bit more professional.
Sell out. You get that popular podcast and all of a sudden Wonder Kid's not good enough. You got to
tighten what happened. That tie. That's what it was. Yeah, it just wasn't stuffy enough. So, I mean, I felt like I needed to put the tie on it.
I want to say I'm disappointed, but I'm just proud. That's all it is. Nothing but proud. Okay, so we're going to actually talk about fantasy football, I guess, because something of epic proportions happened yesterday, today. It's Monday. I don't remember when it happened, but Rob Gronkowski retired, and that is sad. Even if you hate the Patriots, which most of us out here do, I say out here as in everywhere but New England.
That's pretty much true.
Yeah, but man, Gronk retired. Do you think Gronk is going to stay retired? That's the first question.
Oh, he's absolutely going to stay retired. I mean, what on his body isn't broken at this point? I think that's the reason why. It's a sad, sad day, though.
Yeah, people are already taking screenshots of him on IMDb, like in a couple of movies. So I think it might be for real.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he's not on TV in like the next 6 months, something went horribly, horribly wrong.
I mean, it was always the thing that he was going to join wrestling, but with his back as bad as it is, I feel like that's probably a terrible move.
I mean, Brock Lesnar wrestled for a while, right? And his everything
was bad. Brock Lesnar still wrestles.
There we go. I mean,
is he broken?
No, he is the universal champion of the world right now. So,
isn't he like a real wrestler?
And then, yeah, well, he's in UFC, yeah. And now he's fake wrestling for bigger paychecks. So,
oh yeah, definitely.
That's how it works.
A lot less bruises.
Yeah, I absolutely think Gronk's going to WrestleMania. There's no doubt. I mean,
I will probably watch that. That's the thing, too. I haven't watched wrestling in 20 years, and I'll probably
watch Gronk wrestle somebody.
Knowing Gronk, it's going to be him versus a wrestling ring filled with women.
I guarantee they'll give him a valet. There's no doubt about that.
All right. So let's actually talk about this from a relative perspective.
You want to talk about his cousin? That was a bad dad joke. Sorry.
Hold on. Where's this mute button? It's got to be around here somewhere.
Edit that shit out.
No, that was
terrible.
That phase will be forever to
our Trade Addicts listeners. I sincerely apologize. I won't let it happen again.
No, that's why they listen. That's why they listen. So that they have that on you the next time you try to say that you're funny.
All right. So you haven't been able to, you're pretty much, you know, stuck with your Gronk shares, which I am stuck with one. Are you dropping him already? Or are you Calvin Johnson holding out for 3 years just in case?
Just going to let Brian go on this one. I want the last one.
Yeah, I mean, I think I only have one share myself at this point. And I mean, if I don't need the roster spot, then yeah, I'll probably hold him. Just because, I mean, I think he's probably done. But if they get to early December and they get an injury and Tom Brady picks up the phone and calls him, you know, I could see a scenario where he'd come back and play, you know, X number of weeks at the end of the year and then into the playoffs. I can see
would
that.
Would you play him though? I mean, would you trust him to play in those games?
As what? Like
as a fantasy asset?
As a fantasy asset, yeah. Probably.
Yes, Gronk plays. You play him.
Do you?
Oh man, but so, now I'm just like picturing it's the Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden, like some theme music starts, some lights flashing, and Gronk makes some wrestling like entrance.
And on like any other team, yeah, absolutely. But it's the Patriots. They go to the Super Bowl every year. It's not like it's a new thing for Gronk. And the big thing before this was, you know, he wanted to actually be healthy for a Super Bowl because I guess he wasn't for the first, you know, couple or so of him and Brady's career together. But, I mean, this last one basically solidified it. He has nothing left to play for. He's probably going to go down as definitely a Hall of Fame tight end, maybe the best tight end ever. I would say so.
You think he's better than Tony Gonzalez?
That's the argument that's going on right now on the interwebs.
Here's my thing. Tony Gonzalez was an amazing tight end. I'm a Bronco fan, so, of course, Shannon Sharp, again, amazing tight end. As receivers, absolutely. These guys were weapons, best weapons on their team. But, I mean, I'm talking about a guy who essentially was a left tackle playing tight end. Rob Gronkowski just could completely dominate in the run game as well and just was so much more well-rounded than a lot of guys that he's going to be compared to that I think he separated himself just based on physical talent.
Yeah, see, I agree with that, Eitan. I mean, I'm with you there. I don't. There was a lot today out there about that, about Gronk and his place in the all-time, you know, all-time history as far as tight ends go. And I'm with you. I think he's, if he's not the best, I don't think you can put more than maybe one guy up there above him. And even that is questionable. Like you said, you know, I think Gronk is, as far as a complete tight end. And here's the other thing. If obviously, I mean, you judge these guys on what they did and what happened over the course of their career. If this guy stayed healthy, it wouldn't even be close. I mean, it wouldn't be close if he stayed healthy. So, you know, I'm with you. I think Gronk's probably the best ever. But there's a lot of people out there that don't think so.
And they're haters. Yeah. Okay, but to something that we could actually use this for, does this do anything for anybody on the Patriots dynasty-wise? Does this, I mean, we're all guessing that they're drafting someone at tight end.
Yeah, whatever tight end they bring in, it does a lot for. But
I see a lot of Austin Seferian Jenkins gifs going around that they hope that happens. But regardless, I guess we can't really speculate on that. But
I don't think the Patriots do something like that. I mean, again, we all expect them to draft a tight end in this particular class with both Hockenson, Font, even Irv Smith. All these guys are weapons and it can even be used in an H-back role. So somebody like Belichick, who is going to completely morph his offense from week to week, is going to really want a chess piece. And all three of these guys in this particular class at tight end are guys that you can, you know, line up out wide, you can put in line, you can put in the H-back role, and they're able to accomplish all of those effectively. So especially seeing last year him go after Sony Michel after needing a specific, talent pool on his team, just seeing all the talent at tight end with Gronk now retired, with the weapons that team doesn't have, I think there's no chance that the Patriots come out of this draft without one of those three guys on their roster. And that guy is going to get a hell of targets, all the targets.
Yeah, my next question was going to be, is there anybody on this team that on the roster right now you even want or care about to...
Julian Edelman always. I mean, if you need a PPR receiver, if you need 12 points, Julian Edelman's going to get you 12 points every game. So that's great if he plays. But beyond that, yeah, I think you want Sony Michel, you want Julian Edelman, you want whatever tight end is on the Patriots roster. And then again, with those guys, it'll be another situation where you have that concentrated offense that I always reference, because there really isn't much outside of those guys to compete with them for targets.
At AP Wilde, Adam Wilde, our friend, wants to know, is the door now open for Braxton Berrios to shine? Is it finally time?
I mean, is Edelman
or are they
going to
go draft like Debo or Andy Isabella and completely wipe Braxton Berrios off the face of the New England map?
I'd be surprised to see them draft receiver, knowing what their record has been with drafted receivers.
So bad. How weird is that?
Yeah, they bring in guys. They bring in undervalued guys in free agency. So I don't see why they kind of go away from what's been working for so long. But they have to get some extra talent somewhere.
Okay, I've had it with Patriots talk. We're going to move on. Why hasn't TJ Yeldon signed anywhere? There's no real news backing this. I'm just frustrated because I have a lot of shares. Does anyone have any TJ Yeldon feelings, or is there any spots left where we think he'll matter?
I mean, yeah, I don't know why he hasn't signed, to be honest.
Been rumblings of him staying with Jacksonville to back up ankles. There's been nothing. It's weird for someone who
was Fournette like that. If you do that, we'll start. We'll start right now, Russ.
I'm sorry, who?
Please do. Please do.
Oh my god. Oh my god, we're going here.
Lenny Ankles, that's what his jersey says.
So we love Dalvin Cook on one hand, but we hate Leonard Fournette. And it's for the same reason. And both of those guys have injury issues, and both of those guys had injury issues in college. So I don't understand the price disparity between a lot of people of those two particular players. It just seems to me like it's completely out of whack, and it's just, it's the dynasty community and the Twitter community kind of just going out on a limb and making something true that shouldn't be.
Okay, here are my reasons why. I was trying to think of something funny and I got nothing. It's recurring with both legs, which is bad. It's both of his ankles that have been problems, and it's just like giant dudes. It's like basketball. The second someone's like hip or someone's foot starts to go, it's pretty much downhill for them. If you can't run, there's nothing you could do. ACL tears aren't a big deal anymore. And what I think the biggest reason there's the big difference between their value is, at least for me, I'd rather a dude go out for the year and then come back as opposed to ankles who misses two games every once in a while and then is a decoy for three quarters of a game and then, you know, get suspended for not showing up for a team photo. And then, like, to me, like, Dalvin Cook, he got hurt last year. If you were smart, you knew at least most of it was a write-off. And once he got healthy at the end, he started running well. And his injuries, whether, I mean, a shoulder and a knee aren't really related in any way, shape, or form. So I would rather have the Keenan Allen special where it's a couple of injuries that have nothing to do with each other that seem random enough than one guy who keeps hurting the same part of his body over and over again.
I mean, I can see that. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. I was just going to say, I think for me, you know, and I don't know how accurate this is, but I think Dalvin Cook, you know, he has the ability to contribute more in the passing game too. I mean, he had 40 catches last year in 11 games that he played. You know, I don't know. I don't know that Fournette, I mean, he had 36 his rookie season, but I think that's getting close to kind of where his ceiling is as far as that goes. Whereas Dalvin, I could see, if healthy, catching 55, 60 balls. So I think for me, that's a little bit of a difference.
Well, Leonard Fournette had Corey Grant and TJ Yeldon on the same team. So how is he going to catch all those passes? I think Corey Grant might still be there. Yeldon's gone. So more targets.
Grant's a free agent also, isn't he?
Well, the other thing that concerns me a little bit is the quarterback. Because I think with Blake Bortles, so the efficiency should be better from the quarterback position, right? But, you know, I think Bortles dumping the ball to those running backs, Nick Foles doesn't do that. I mean, he literally put Corey Clement out of a career essentially in Philly. So I'm not sure about that. I do understand the point, Eitan, about, you know, based on where these guys are valued right now, I think your argument is very valid. I think
I would take both of those guys back to back in the first round of a dynasty startup if I had to. Now, I know I won't have to. I know I won't have to because those guys will drop. Dalvin Cook will probably drop in the second, early third, absolute latest. Leonard Fournette probably late second, something around there. But if I had to, I mean, these are still top 10 backs. And again, yeah, there are a lot of things going right for a guy like Dalvin. There are a lot of positives to be happy about. I'm not saying that shouldn't be the case for you guys, and I understand that sentiment. But, I mean, he's competing, at least in terms of targets, with two extreme target getters, in Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. When you look on the Jaguars, I mean, who are we really talking about? D.D. Westbrook? D.J. Chark? Keelan Cole? Does he still even exist? Is he still a thing? I mean, there's just so much opportunity in that offense that is just left unseen. And because that offense had a down year, people are kind of beginning to run away. Leonard Fournette, yeah, he had his injuries. Dalvin Cook, yes, had his injuries. But both of those guys were crazily mismanaged by their teams last year. I mean, they brought him back too early, both of them, several times, and that didn't help recovery. Leonard Fournette's offensive line was completely decimated very early in the season last year, and that entire team is built around its running game. So, again, there's so many caveats that have a lot to do with running back numbers. Look at Melvin Gordon. We were saying the same thing about Melvin Gordon 2 years ago as we're saying about Leonard Fournette now. We're saying that he's injured. We're saying that he's a plotter and that he has low yards per carry and that he can't catch footballs. And all of those things dramatically, you know, switched in the last couple of seasons. I think that those guys are very similar running backs. They're power running backs. They have a little wiggle to them. And they're on, at least to me, run-based offenses. So I think that you kind of need to separate the wheat from the chaff when trying to look at all of the things that impact what actually creates a successful rush, and then make your decision on investing in the situation and the player at the same time when looking at a guy like Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, you know what I think, Eitan? I think that you need to get out of here with all this analysis stuff, all this educated analysis stuff. You know what else was decimated last year? The Jaguars' offensive line. Yes, it was. So was Leonard Fournette's ankle in week one. So,
yo, you hear that yins are coming out? It's like, oh, man.
It is.
It kind of felt good, but it felt so weird. I don't know what's happening.
I loved it.
I'm surprised it took this long. I mean, you guys had to wait until LaBelle left, until AB left, before you just finally let it out.
He snapped. It's great.
Oh, I'm holding in curse words right now.
It's great for podcasts. Not so much for, you know, Brian's actual psyche in any way, shape, or form.
Hey, I cut a freaking wrestling type promo this week on Twitter.
That was so good.
That nobody watched. Nobody watched it. There was like four people that watched it.
Three of them were me.
Yeah. Thank you for the support, brother.
I got you.
I appreciate it.
All right. So we're going to jump around because we're talking about Dalvin Cook. So we are going to jump straight to a Trade Addicts trade.
Trade Addicts trade.
Trade Addicts leagues are 12 teams, super flex, PPR, tight end premium, a little bit for return yardage. This is a Trade Addicts 3 trade. This is a co-host trade. We need a co-host trade music or something. Co-host trade.
Okay, you have that one, bud.
Yeah. Awesome. That just happened. All right. So this trade, Dalvin Cook and Tyler Boyd for Matt Stafford and T.Y. Hilton. Now, again, so since this is between Brian and I, Eitan, why don't you hit us with what you think about this one?
I think I really need to recuse myself from judging this trade because I'm not going to be judging this trade at all fairly, because Tyler Boyd and Cooper Kupp are my two favorite Dynasty League players. So, I mean, I love that side of the deal for what it's worth. I'm not even going to come out with any analysis. This is just fanboy love. But, you know, good pieces all around. And then T.Y. Hilton, and of course, if you need a quarterback in a Superflex league, it's going to be hell to get one. So I get it from that perspective.
Yeah, this trade was a very, very sad realization for me. I got the Matt Stafford side, and the reason I got it was because I felt unsafe having Marcus Mariota as my quarterback too.
Just say
did
it.
Did you say Mariota without saying Mariota?
Like, yes, he did.
Have we gotten there now?
It happened.
You had a shitty quarterback, Russ.
I don't feel good about it. That was uncalled for.
I'm just kidding, Marcus. We love you.
Marcus Mariota, over under 10 games played. 10 games started this season.
Over.
I'll take the over on that.
I'm going to take the under.
Are you thinking it's injury, or you think Ryan Tannehill is actually going to replace him?
I think both. I think Marcus Mariota is going to go down at some point. When he goes down, Ryan Tannehill is going to step in, going to realize that they're both crappy quarterbacks, but there's no real difference between the two. And they're going to continue to start Tannehill and not pay Marcus Mariota, not give him an extension next season, and start to search for the quarterback of the future for the Tennessee Titans.
Such a terrible time for his contract to be running out. That really worries me for his
career. It's a really, really problematic time that a lot of people don't really pay attention to. That's why I'm worried about Mariota. I wouldn't be so worried if, you know, he was a second-year quarterback, even a third-year quarterback, and they had one more year guaranteed. But the fact that they're going to have to now pay him an extension, that's terrifying, because that means he's as good as gone. Jameis Winston is in the same situation, but I expect Winston to be a lot better with Arians, of course, and with the weapons that he has. Marcus Mariota has maybe Corey Davis.
Are we going to start on this now? Maybe
yeah,
Corey
yeah,
Davis.
Start on this. I hate Corey Davis. I hate that people value Corey Davis. I hate that you can draft a receiver that high, and after 2 years of literal no production, still think of him the same way. Now you're going to come back at me with Devontae Adams, and I'm going to come back at you with Aaron Rodgers. So I really don't know why people still value Corey Davis the way that they do.
Because he's good at football, and he has a very good market share. So when he and his quarterback are healthy, they do well. Any game last year where Corey Davis had more than 7 targets, he had double-digit fantasy points.
And I would say, yeah. I mean, that's definitely a good thing in Corey Davis's favor. But again, who's he competing with? Do we think that offense is just going to be Corey Davis and who?
Derrick Henry?
Yeah, they're going to have to add weapons to that team to be a competent offense. So he's going to get another wide receiver drafted. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't draft another wide receiver this year. And then what are we talking about in terms of market share, in terms of the targets that he's actually gaining? If that's his only claim to fame, I think that's problematic because that can change from year to year as soon as the talent level increases.
Well, it's not a claim to fame, but it's something to hold on to until he actually gets a rapport with a quarterback where he and him haven't been held at the same time. And what is this, 4 years, 4 different coordinators?
3.
So,
yeah, well, 4 for the team, 3 for
Mariota,
the
I meant, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I shifted a little bit in my brain without saying it out loud. So, you know, whoops.
Well, I think the other thing with Corey Davis, you know, we've gotten really spoiled here since the 20 whatever draft that was, 14 draft, where all those receivers, excuse me, all those receivers came into the league and contributed right away. And there have been several in each of the last couple of classes that have been able to do that. But historically speaking, it's not until the third year before these wide receivers break out. So now, I 100% agree on the situation. I don't like the quarterback. I don't like the other weaponry on the team. As far as the help goes, I mean, yeah, he has volume, but it's not good volume. I don't like the head coach and the offensive system. I think that team is going to run the football. You know, they've shown that in the past. I think they're going to do it more. So, you know, I don't think, you know, there are some things that worry me with Corey Davis. I think he's very talented. I think he has the talent to succeed in the league. You know, I guess for me, it's what is the argument we're having here? Is it about Corey Davis's value, or is it about Corey Davis, like, you know, is it about his current value, or is it about what he can be? Because I think those two things are, I think he's being valued right now where people think he can be, and he hasn't shown it yet. So, and the situation doesn't look great for him to show it in the next year. So I think that's where the concern is, at least in my opinion. So we'll see what happens with all that. But I like Corey Davis a lot. I think he has the talent to be very relevant in this league. But the situation sucks. I mean, Tennessee is not a great situation right now. So we'll see what they do in the draft and kind of take it from there, I guess.
When given the choice between talent and situation, for me, I'm always leaning on the situation side, because that's something that I can project, and that's something that I can kind of, you know, make my own evidence-based assumptions about what's going to go on in the future. In terms of somebody's talent level, I mean, I'm not an NFL scout, not a real NFL scout. We're all trying to be fake NFL scouts here, but I mean, what do we really, really know about prospects? At least more so than teams and the guys that work with them every day. But I mean, I can tell you who he's going to be competing with, and it doesn't look good on a roster so devoid of talent that clearly needs that and is going to need that with a new quarterback to kind of get them rolling again.
All right. So last week I was on the Superflex Super Show, and there was a trade that we were arguing over, which pretty much in my brain boiled down to Corey Davis for the 110. What side would you take on that trade?
Davis all day.
I think you have to take Davis for the 110, but that's just because it's the 110. He was bought for what, the 101 a few years ago. So, I mean, if that's his current value, then I guess maybe I should have less of a problem with him than I do. But I see a lot of people still thinking that he's worth a top four, top five pick, and I'm not sure if we're there anymore with Corey Davis.
Rookie pick, I'm there for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think in this particular draft, again, when we see where everybody lands, I think there are going to be a couple of hugely valuable wide receivers in this draft because there's a few teams out there that really need an extra receiver and a lot of guys that project to be ones in 2019.
Okay, well, we're not talking about rookies yet because I still need other people to tell me how to feel about a lot of them. And I feel like that's probably just going to happen after the draft. So we're going to talk about Cam Newton for a second. Brian, you want to talk about Cam Newton?
Yeah, let's talk about Cam Newton.
Go ahead. Tell people why we're talking about Cam Newton.
So he's not having sex for a month.
He's not really shooting no more.
Yeah, what is he married? Yes.
Poor fantasy footballers.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what to think about this. I mean, do we think this is going to affect him in a positive or negative manner? Do I care? Why did he tell everyone this? Like, this is nobody gives a shit about this. I don't care about Cam's sex life. I assumed he's getting what he needs, but like, shit, I don't need to know about that.
See, this is exactly why I just, you know, avoided having sex when I was in high school. I needed my brain in the right place to get my grades. That's exactly what it was.
And Brian, I think you're being unfair there. There's a harem of women out there that are all devastated by this news. So, I mean, understand. There's something that respects the gravity of this loss.
I mean,
so
it's
you're
a
saying
month.
There wasn't a harem of women upset for me in high school is what you're saying.
that's what it was.
That's exactly what you're saying. Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Okay. I accept that.
I mean, if it gives him more time to rehab his shoulder, then fine. I mean, that's good, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, if he's all high strung overthrowing people, that's a problem.
Oh, man, release. I almost made a joke that is so not appropriate for our show.
He's working on a different release point, all right? Another bad joke. That's two in one show. Damn it.
Oh, man, we got to start, like, using these as drops.
Yeah, or either, like, we're definitely, this
he's
show is going to have
up.
The dad jokes for, sort of name to it. I'm gonna have to think of a horrible, horrible pun for the name of this show.
Oh.
All right, we're gonna move on just because I don't even know what to do with that anymore. Let's pick a question. I don't want to pick a question. Eitan, pick a question.
I will pick a question. What are my thoughts on Kenny Golladay? Does he look to be a top 15 wide receiver, or is he overhyped?
My this answer is from Dirty Bird Dynasty at Bird Dynasty, by the way.
My answer to this Dirty Bird Dynasty is if he's actually ranked at 15, then fine. Yes, that's exactly where he should be ranked. But a lot of people see him as a legitimate wide receiver one. And I'm not necessarily talking, you know, wide receiver 11, wide receiver 12, like top 10 wide receiver. And if we're looking at it like that, hell no. And hell no for a lot of reasons. Number one, the Detroit Lions offensive line is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous with the talent that they have up front. That run blocking offensive line is going to be used to the best of its ability. And Kerryon Johnson, I think, is going to be the main yard producer for that team. But beyond that, Marvin Jones is going to come back, and I think that's going to open up the offense a little bit for Matthew Stafford from what we saw in the majority of last season. But I also think that that is ultimately going to eat into the massive target share that Kenny Golladay got in the latter portion of the season. So I think that any huge leap that we see coming from him is a little bit overreaching. I think he's fine right there at 15. I think for me, him and a guy like Tyler Boyd are back to back, and I think they give you the same level of production in 2019.
Except you can probably get Boyd three rounds later.
And that's why I love him.
Seriously, you've ruined me for that. Like, it's funny. Like, I really needed a quarterback in Trade Addicts 3. And my first offer was, I think, like, Kiki QT instead of Boyd. And right away, Brian's like, I think I'll do it for Boyd. And I'm just like, you son of a... And I sat there and I thought about it. And I'm just like...
I have 85 shares of him.
I have like 18 other shares. I need a quarterback. I want to actually win a Trade Addicts League at some point. And you need a quarterback to win this. You need quarterbacks to win a Superflex League. So I did it. I didn't feel good about it. And it's all your fault. Like, if Tyler Boyd sucks, I don't know if we could talk anymore.
I'm kind of in the same boat. So understand that if he has down here, I'm going to be sinking right there with you because I have him in so many leagues. But again, there's nobody in the offense to compete with him. Even if they draft a receiver to replace Ross, what's that guy going to be? Probably a deep threat. Probably like an Andy Isabella type that is going to be a good wide receiver, I think, but somebody that's more of a complimentary receiver than the main possession type guy that's going to get targets. So I like possession guys. I like wide receiver twos. I'm team wide receiver two all day.
Why do you like Cooper Kupp so much then?
Because he's wide receiver two. They're all wide receiver twos in that team. You're going to have to tell me the take on that.
We ain't going there. No.
You're going to have to tell me the take on that. You can't just weasel out of that one.
No, I did it because I know how much you love him, how much you love Kupp. I like all three of those guys a lot. So I probably have Brandon Cooks top there.
Why would you do that? Why would you have Brandon Cooks ranked any higher than either Robert Woods or Cooper Kupp?
Consistency over time.
History is the only thing you could really throw at them.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'd say. Consistency over time.
Well,
but that's pretty much it. I mean, I can understand the arguments for each of them. I think the other thing I'm concerned about is his health, especially this year, because as Russ, my boy, always says, when these players come back off these ACLs, it's not the ACL that's the issue. I mean, everybody has an ACL now. It's the conditioning. It's the hamstrings. It's the soft tissue stuff. So, you know, I want to see him not be injured in the first couple weeks of training camp or the first couple weeks of the season with hamstring issues or something like that before I go all in at that price. As far as the talent goes, I mean, I think for you, if I heard what you said correctly when you're talking about Corey Davis and some of these other receivers, for you, it's a situation thing with Kupp too. I mean, he's there's no doubt that he and Jared Goff have a chemistry that, you know, I mean, those guys, they hooked up and they hooked up a lot. So, you know, for big plays. I get it. I do. I just, my personal preference in those receivers, I would probably take Brandon Cooks before I would take the other two.
Before we completely derail even further, I just want to completely agree with your Kenny Golladay take. I do put him around like 15-ish. Like, I really don't think he's in the top 12. Honestly, I think he's better off with Marvin Jones and a healthy Kerryon Johnson. Like, at the end, when he was the only guy there, he was getting 30 targets a game, except 22 of them weren't catchable, and, you know, he dropped two of them. So we got like 6 for 56, and you're lucky a touchdown. I like Kenny Golladay. I think, man, his hype has gone insane. Very strong wide receiver too, with definite chance for a wide receiver 1 week or a few, but I don't see him as a top 12 at all. Not at all. That was harsh. But I don't think so. Brian, what are your thoughts on Golladay?
I like Golladay. I mean, I think, but you know, I kind of feel the same way. I mean, I think they're going to run the ball a lot too. You know, and I think that the passing game, the other thing about the passing game there, I think it will become more efficient as they run the ball better. So, you know, it's not going to be so much volume as it is, you know, just who's, you know, Stafford's going to spread that ball around. You know, Jones is back. They're going to have to maybe use a tight end. I don't know. I mean, they don't use tight ends. So
you've got your ex-boy, Jesse James.
They're not going to use them anyways. So it's a moot point. I mean, they just don't use the tight end there. They didn't use Ebron. You know, they didn't use Roberts when he was healthy last year. They just don't use tight end. So, but I mean, I like Golladay. I think he's priced pretty accurately right now. I mean, he's, you know, I think probably where he is, you know, it's fine with me. I mean, I think where he is right now is fine. But there are other options later that I think make sense. You know, I would probably look to grab different players in that price range for the most part, and then grab some of these other guys we've been talking about, the Boyds and the Cups and those guys. So,
yeah, if I could trade Golladay for Boyd plus, like, that's a dream of a trade. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, we know you like that idea. All right. So, two drink threw a bunch of questions at us, and two of them I actually find interesting. So that's good. That's a good ratio for his questions usually. First, he actually asked, when's the last time he popped the hood on one of his own teams? Are we going to get you and Stompy to bring your own teams?
Are we
into the evaluator?
Are we going to have a crossover episode? It sounds like we're going to have a crossover episode.
I mean, you know, I'm down for that. Yeah, I was, you know, already trying to invade your show. The second Stompy told me that you guys were having a show, I literally said dibs on first guess. I don't care what happens. I am going to be the first other voice heard on your show. And I don't know if he told you this or not, but that it happened.
Oh, yeah. That was all part of the plan.
Here you go. Your plan worked to perfection.
You're the only reason that we have any transitions on the show. So anytime that we actually do a successful transition, we're like, shout out to Helios.
I literally clap. There was once or twice recently you guys had one, and I literally was like, that's my boys. Yes.
Oh, man. That was the influence. Last time I popped the hood on one of my teams, I'm not sure what that really means. I'm constantly trying to kind of rejig my rosters to fit them a little bit better. And I've been running into issues lately. I have a serious problem being on the Trade Addicts show. I'm in a Trade Addicts league, and after the startup, I actually haven't made a trade since. And I'm starting to.
What?
Yeah.
We've talked a few times.
You
went after Hill a few times and missed out on him twice. I think there was a few guys you were going after, and I just don't think it ever ended up working. So you're trying. That's really what matters.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm just I don't really have the ammo. The problem is, with startups, what I actually end up doing that probably isn't really the way I should be going, but something that I've done this year is I just have super balanced teams that all have like no extreme depth at any one position. So I don't have this myriad of tradable assets on the team. If I trade a guy, like, I almost need to replace him and get something else on top of that to even make it worth it for me. So I'm in this weird situation on a lot of my rosters where I really am probably not going to be comfortable moving any pieces until I kind of see what everybody's worth. But on the teams that I already have, yeah, I'm constantly trying to better them any way I can. And a guy that I'm going after everywhere right now that is probably – a little bit lesser known and might be, you know, displaced on the depth chart, but I'm going to kind of keep hope alive is Chris Warren. I am trying to get Chris Warren everywhere. Don't even care if he's good at football. I really don't. I'm not interested in it. I know that Derek Carr, even with Antonio Brown in town, isn't going to be a super high volume passer. And John Gruden's gonna rush the rock. So anybody that's gonna have a chance at, you know, maybe 15 touches a game, I guess maybe this is the same love I had for Gus Edwards before he was so sadly replaced. But I mean, as long as these guys are out there, I'm gonna keep trying to target them, because if you can get them before they blow up, even just turning them around at that point is so worth your time and so worth your effort, and it really kind of separates the people who take the time to really research and to kind of know those less heralded guys from the people that kind of just look at box scores.
Another guy I've been going after of the same value level is Trey Quinn, slot guy in the Redskins. He showed before he got hurt last year, but also, I mean, what did your boy Case Keenum do last year? And for the people that were in that slot,
he's the greatest college quarterback ever, and he probably should have just, you know, stayed in college. I don't know if you can do that.
A couple classes.
It's what he should do. Just go get a master's, get a PhD, go make himself a new degree. I don't care, man. Just get off my real life team. But we've replaced him with Joe Flacco now. So
you got excellent. An elite quarterback finally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's just completely elite. I hate this, by the way. I might say a few curse words now. Let me get this out of here. But the worst position in sports, the absolute worst position you can be in as a team, trying to build a team, is too bad to actually be a contender and too bad to get in the playoffs or do anything past the first round to get in the playoffs, but too good to not get a high-level draft pick, which next year is going to be Tua Tagovailoa. So the Broncos are screwing themselves multiple ways here. Number one, I think they're paying something like $20 million in cap to Mr. Flacco, which is absurd in and of its own right, but he's going to be just good enough to get them to like 7-9. And then we're going to be in the same position next year as we were in this year, except with having to pay a higher price potentially to move up for a quarterback then. Now, if Drew Lock is any good, maybe all this is moot, but I don't necessarily love Drew Lock either. So I think the Joe Flacco move was another just comical error by John Elway. I love him and I hate him so much. I have really, really mixed feelings on John Elway.
It's okay to love the player and hate the executive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's getting to those levels.
All right. So the last part of two drinks. Oh, by the way, at FL two drink minimum on the Twitters. How Baldwin having more surgeries changes the fantasy impact in Seattle. Now, I have Baldwin in Trade Addict 6, which is the league, well, clearly Brian and I are in, but the one you're in also. And I, before the day this broke, I offered every single team a trade for Doug Baldwin because I was sitting there doing what I do, not working and looking at my fantasy football team. And I'm like, my team's really young. And then I have Doug Baldwin. So let's see if I could get something for him. And then all of a sudden, reject. What is going on? Not even a counter. What? Oh, he's getting more surgery in the offseason. Crud. So I think at this point, if you have Doug Baldwin, you're probably stuck with him unless you're selling him for, I couldn't even get a mid-second. So unless you're getting a late second, early third, or God knows what, I think you're sort of stuck until he comes back and starts producing again, because he will. That's what he does. He's going to come back, and in the second half of the games of the second half of the season, because that's the frickin' Seahawks, he's going to produce.
I don't know why
I got angry at where I was going with that rant, but it just sort of, it got away from me.
Is a year too early to say I told you so with Doug Baldwin? Because I definitely did. I mean,
Give me that crap. That is not why you were against Doug Baldwin.
Hey, but it was part of the reason why. The reason why was these injuries were adding up over the course of his career. He was starting to get past the age where wide receivers can heal themselves to effective levels quickly. And the salary, as well as all of those other factors, made me think that he seems to be somewhat expendable on the team. Now, it's obvious the team is not going to replace him this season because they don't really have a need to, because the Seattle Seahawks actually have a pretty decent handle on their salary cap. But if there's ever an issue moving forward, I definitely think Doug is gone. And that, you know, set aside, Tyler Lockett is that team's number one and has been that team's number one, I think, since this season started. Even if Doug Baldwin was playing, I don't think you necessarily need more targets to be number one. I think to be a number one receiver on a team, what you actually need are the better targets, are the more quality targets. And that's what Tyler Lockett is getting. Doug Baldwin, you know, he's going to get the 5, 10-yard, 15-yard maybe passes peppered with at him. But Tyler Lockett is good for, you know, a 60-yard bomb a game. And, yeah, you can say, well, that's not repeatable and, you know, that's not something we should be interested in. That's not something we should chase. Yes and no, because we kind of saw the same thing with Tyreek Hill last season. A lot of people thought, okay, well, you know, he's just getting all these deep bombs that can't be replicated. But there are some players that is their niche. That is their role. A guy like DeSean Jackson comes to mind. If you can get those players on your team, I mean, for me, consistency be damned. If I get a guy on my team that can win me a week, I'm good with it. And I think on the Seattle Seahawks, if they're going to pass the ball and not just run every play, I think Tyler Lockett is definitely going to – I think he's going to get some notoriety as, I'm going to say, a top 16 wide receiver moving forward.
Nice. Especially if you play in deep leagues, leagues with a lot of starters. How about that? Like, if you're starting 10 guys, Lockett absolutely has a spot as an every week starter on your team. At least I think, because that chance, like he'll get 5 targets. He'll probably catch one of them for 11 yards. And then you got to hope he gets another one of those for 60 yards and a touchdown, because that happened a lot last year. And if you're starting 10 guys, that 10th guy isn't necessarily going to be super dependable anyway, unless you got a super team. So you might as well get a guy that has a track record of catching those 60 yard touchdowns. Are you frozen, Brian, or are you just sort of asleep?
No, I'm here. I would love to see what Russell Wilson could do with a real wide receiver.
I know.
That came across harsh.
Before you get started, there was those rumors of Russell Wilson getting traded to the Giants, and I wanted it to happen.
Him with Odell
For
Beckham?
His sake, I
are
wanted
you
that
serious?
To happen.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, the guy hasn't had a real number one since he came into the league. I mean, Jermaine Curse, really? Baldwin is what Baldwin is. Doug Baldwin is a good NFL wide receiver. Yes. He's a good NFL wide receiver. I'm not even saying solid. He's good. He's way above average, but he's not, you know. I don't know. I would love to see what Russell Wilson could do with a true number one top 12 wide receiver that they invest some draft capital in. I just would love to see it for once. I mean, the guy's 30 years old now. He's been in the league for what, 7-8 years. Like, it's time. Like, get him a damn receiver. Let's go. I mean, get him one of these young bucks. I don't care. But I'd like to see, you know, and for me, that's a landing place. We talked earlier about landing places for players, rookie players a little bit. If they get a number one wide receiver, I love that player in Seattle if they throw him the ball. I mean, that's obviously the biggest concern up there is, are they going to just run the ball 38 times a game, which is very possible. You know, but I'd love to see what Russ could do with a really elite, high upside wide receiver. Because I think it could be awesome. And yeah, if he would have gone to New York, that would have been unreal. Could you imagine him with those weapons? I mean, all of them, Barkley, Ingram, Shepard, OBJ
If Wilson went to the Giants, you and I would have to get season tickets so I could watch Wilson and you could watch Baquon.
Yeah, that would have been unreal.
All right, so let's talk about reality. Why don't you pick another question, Brian?
All right, let's go with, all right, so I'll do one of the ones that I put on here. So Carla, this is at CoinFlip22, asks, this is more of a kind of a trade question, but it's who's more valuable, Amari Cooper, which this one's going to be fun, or picks 104 and 112?
I'll go first. I want Amari Cooper. At this point in every... Hi, dog.
we are a... It's okay. We are a pet-friendly show.
Absolutely. even though you don't really seem to like your animals, but that's besides the point. words sidetracked, gone. I haven't really fallen in love with anyone in this draft. I feel like past years, like if I had the 104, like I knew there was someone I wanted. This year feels so mad to me, where like I feel like I'm probably gonna be more into these players in 2 years. Like, I think I'm fine skipping out on this draft and trying to buy them later, especially when you get those people that think this is 2014 over again and they don't produce next year, because rookie wide receivers don't really produce. That's not a thing that actually usually happens. And if they do, it's that Calvin Ridley, like three games and that's it. So, I mean, I want Amari all day here in like a real sense. Like if this was my team, I want Amari. And then for value wise, I just think Amari's worth more than that. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I mean, I view Amari the same way that you do. I really do think that on Dallas, as his team's true number one threat, that there's some security in the volume that he's going to be getting from Dak Prescott. There's also stability. There's long-term stability for Amari Cooper. He's going to be in Dallas for a long time because they're going to have to sign him to an extension. So the fact that they traded that first-round pick to get him is really telling to me, because I know that you're going to have a young receiver with a young quarterback for a long time. And for me, that stability is really valuable in dynasty leagues because, again, it's more easily projectable than movement, the levels that we've seen this offseason. The 104 and the 112, you're probably looking at a tight end in this class. For me, it's probably going to be the level of guy that you do find at the lower half of the first round, or potentially maybe if you want to be a little bit risky, a running back at that spot. But I really think that people overvalue the heck out of picks and don't realize the level of talent that Amari Cooper possesses. In his first couple of years, his first year, he was a wide receiver that was doing things that we just hadn't seen before at a young age. And I think that people are too early to discount that because they don't want to be patient with a guy like Amari. But if it's going to be getting, you know, eight targets, nine targets again. Yeah, I think there's a difference between Amari and Corey Davis, because I think Corey Davis has a quarterback and Amari Cooper has a quarterback that can throw a football. So I think that's the big difference between the two of them.
I just had to throw that in there a little bit. All right, see, like my problem, no, that's the wrong words. I think the problem with Amari Cooper is the way he came into the league, everyone was so enthralled with him. He was so young, everyone, and he's going to be the quarterback. He's going to be a wide receiver one for the next 30 years kind of thing, just because he came into the league at 16. People aren't able to move off of that idea. Like, this is like the Dez Bryant syndrome that happened, you know, last year, because we've only been doing this for a year. So if I said I talked about it, it had to be last year. Dez Bryant was a dominant wide receiver one, and then all of a sudden you couldn't trade him. He was worth absolutely zero because people couldn't get out of their minds the idea that he was a wide receiver one, and they couldn't get in their minds that he could probably be a solid wide receiver two. Amari Cooper doesn't need to be wide receiver, like overall wide receiver one, to bring back whatever value you give for him right now. He has an ADP of 21. That's the end of the second round. Like right now, Amari Cooper or Antonio Brown. I would take Amario. Nice. Awesome. Amari Cooper every single time on that, given situations and places in their careers. And at 21 overall, does he need to be the wide receiver one? No, because especially if for some reason I'm doing a one quarterback draft, he's going to be my wide receiver two, because I'm taking a wide receiver in the first round. So to me, I love Amari Cooper, but the thing is, everyone is stuck on the idea of what they thought he was going to be coming into the league and not able to change their perception of what he is and what he could be. on a team where, like you're saying, is really stable. And Amari has the thing of disappearing every once in a while. It even happened at the end of the season last year. Nobody's perfect. Michael Thomas lost his consistency towards the end of the year. I don't think he needs to be thought of as the next whatever wide receiver guy. I think assuming 10 to 15 is still awesome for what you have to pay for him right now.
You need to love Amari Cooper for being Amari Cooper. You just need to accept him as he is.
That is life advice. Replace Amari Cooper with just about anything, and bam, knowledge dropped from Eitan right there.
Yeah, I mean, but you're exactly right with that. People just thought he was going to be so much better than he was, and because it didn't turn out that way, people are sour to him. But from a value perspective, he is still just now entering his prime, so we probably haven't even seen the best from Amari Cooper. And again, he's got a job locked down on a team probably for at least 5 seasons as their top target getter, if not one of their top two target getters. So I think that's something that's often goes overlooked, that really, really should play a more prominent role in how people value dynasty assets.
Brian, how do you feel about Amari Cooper for the 104 and the 112?
Yeah, I'd take Cooper all day there, especially in this draft class. I know people get sick of hearing that, but for me, it makes a difference. You know, he was wide receiver 7 the last half of the season. I mean, from week 8 on, he was the wide receiver 7. So, I mean, we're talking about outperforming guys like Tyreek Hill, Mike Evans, Keenan Allen, and a bunch more. So, you know, I think the move was good for him. I think, you know, like was mentioned, he has a quarterback that is more than capable of getting in the football. And the running game helps. You know, that's something that they never really had in Oakland. And I think that helps. I mean, teams are focused on shutting down Ezekiel Elliott. So, that helps the passing game. And, you know, when Dak can, I mean, you saw what it was like when Zeke wasn't in the lineup, right? And then when he comes back in the lineup, what a difference that makes. And I think that's the case here. And I agree 100% too on just accepting Amari Cooper for what he is. You know, when we label a guy so early in their career with lofty expectations, and then they don't meet those expectations, you know, and you've paid certain capital for them on your dynasty teams, it's frustrating. And a lot of times that'll lead owners to give up on that player, or to have, you know, or to value them that way. Like if they're not producing that way, then they're crap, and that's not the case. So, you know, I'm with you guys on that one as well. I like Cooper here over the two firsts.
Amari Cooper or the 101?
I'd take Cooper.
Amari Cooper, easy for me. Because the 101 could, I mean, just as easily go on to the Bills, and then what do you really have? I mean, situation is everything, especially when it comes to wide receiver. Running back, you kind of know is going to be used. Situation only matters for knowing where they stand on their depth chart. But a wide receiver, you cannot produce. You can Corey Davis all over yourself in a bad situation. And I think that's what we're trying to avoid with these receivers. And that's the opportunity cost that people don't often factor into draft picks. They're just looking at talent.
So, Eitan, can we clarify something? Because you've said that a couple times now tonight, and I want to make sure that our listeners understand what you're saying, because I think I understand what you're saying, but it's not coming across that way, maybe. Or maybe I'm hearing it weird. When you're talking about situation and that you would take situation over talent when we're talking about dynasty players, you're talking specifically, or at least my understanding of it is, it sounds to me like you're talking more about opportunity, not necessarily situation.
No, or, situation paired with that, because opportunity is one thing, but situation also takes into account contracts and takes into account the contracts on the other guys on that team and all the other things that go into helping me project out over a number of years what this person's target share is going to be moving forward. So, yes, it's based in opportunity, but it means more than just opportunity to me.
Okay. Okay. I just wanted to clarify, because I know the player that stands out to me that I was trying to think in my head how I was going to argue against that, because I find myself taking talented players more often than, I mean, yes, I consider situation and opportunity as well, but I always feel like the talent will eventually overcome that. And that's a different debate. We don't have to necessarily get into that. But the player that sticks out in my mind against that was DeAndre Hopkins, in the sense of who was throwing him the football. Now, opportunity wise, he was getting absolutely peppered with targets, so that makes sense. You know, but he was doing it with Hoyer and with Mallett and with whoever the hell else was playing in Houston. Keenum was there for a while, I think.
I don't have an answer to DeAndre Hopkins.
He's just a freak. He's a freak.
Yeah, and I mean, if you get those guys, then yeah. But like, how often does DeAndre Hopkins come along? How often does Calvin Johnson come along? I get it. You know, talent means something in the NFL. I'm not saying it doesn't. But Cooper Kupp and Tyler Boyd are two of some of the most unathletic guys that you can find, except for, you know, good agility scores. But beyond that, yeah, these guys didn't test particularly well, but they produce. They produce because they're in a situation to produce. And that's why I think that's so important for Dynasty Leaguers, because, yes, situation can change. But, I mean, if there are so many factors that go into what you kind of put into the considerations that you need to think about for specific given players' situation, you can, with more confidence, see a pathway to increased opportunity, which, you know, leads to volume, and volume is all you need in fantasy leagues.
Great conversation, man. Thanks. I appreciate that clarification.
I wasn't listening. Yeah. Can you say that all again?
You can listen.
DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah. DeAndre Hopkins. There we go.
Go get some nuke.
Man, I wish we had a nuke trade that I could pivot to. That would have been awesome.
We can talk about the Texans. We can talk about why I love the Texans this year, why Kiki UT and or Will Fuller are going to be absolute steals this year in drafts.
Because the Texans are awesome, and all they need is an offensive line to not let their quarterback die, and they'll be really good. I mean, yeah. Isn't that like the summation of your argument?
Because that, and because there's no one else on that team that's going to command targets. They don't have a tight end that's going to command targets. They don't have a running back who's going to command targets. So as long as that's the case, if it's just going to be those three guys, well, we see it being done with those three guys in Los Angeles.
Okay, well, the Texans don't have a tight end, but you know who does? The San Francisco 49ers.
Hey-o. So that's what
we're going to talk about go. This Trade Addicts 2 trade.
Trade Addicts trade! You get another one.
Yeah, whatever. This one is nice and simple. It is George Kittle for James Conner. Now, we are tight end premium at 1.75 points per reception. So,
that's tough.
What do you guys feel about this one?
That's a great deal.
All right, Brian, go first, since you just said first.
I love it. I love this deal. For me, I think this would be, you know, it would be probably team specific. But these are two guys.
Let him hedge.
I like both of these guys. I think James Conner is getting just, especially after the year he put up last year, is just getting absolutely disrespected in terms of, I mean, it's hard to say that with a guy that's going in the top two rounds of startup drafts, but you can't trade. I mean, this guy, you can't move him for that value. I mean, you might pick him there, but you're not moving him for that. So, you know, I'm a big Connor guy, obviously. I mean, he plays for my team, so that helps, but I mean, full disclosure, but I just love the way he runs. I think the, you know, Eitan, I think you and I have had a conversation about the uptick in targets he's probably going to get in the passing game this year with Antonio Brown. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think I would lean that way in this deal, even with the premium, but man, I mean, Kittle was good this year. I just don't know. I'm just not sure if he can do that consistently. He may be able to. I know he's taken over that, you know, for some people, he's taken over that top tight end spot. I cannot do that yet. He's definitely top three. I can't put him above Kelce. Kelsey's my one, still, and will be probably for a few years unless, you know, he has a bad injury or something like that. Talent-wise, I like Zach Ertz, too. The situation there is concerning with the drafting of Goddard and then, you know, his contract situation. So we'll see what happens.
Tell the people about the contract.
What's that?
Tell the people about the contract.
Yeah, so they're going to have to pay him a shitload of money to keep him around, and they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it.
He's going to count something like $14 million against the cap this season, which is, I mean, more than double his highest hit against the cap in any season. So, I mean, unless Howie Roseman can pull something out of his you-know-what, which he probably can, they're just going to have to get real creative to keep two really talented guys at that spot. I wouldn't be surprised to see a guy like Zach Ertz potentially traded in the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me either. Yep. And then Goddard is right there behind those two for me. You know, or Kittle, I'm sorry. Jeez. So, you know, we'll see what happens with him in San Francisco with Garoppolo coming back too. And how that works out. But I prefer James Conner in this deal, but only slightly. I like this deal a lot. I saw this one come across and thought, yeah, that's a really intriguing one. So what do you guys think on this one?
Real quick, one QB ADP, Connor is 22, Kittle is at 28, and that's without the tight end premium, obviously. Just throwing some perspective, even though I know ADP doesn't always equal trade value.
I would never take George Kittle that high in a standard PPR league, okay, personally. Well, yeah, no, yeah. In a premium, but I wouldn't take him that high in a.
He went as high as 22 and as low as 35.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't even think of him at 35 with no premium.
I think
Eitan, you took him in the Trade Addict 6.
I did. I took him in the second round, actually, in Trade Addict 6. And I actually kind of like it because, yeah, tight end is a disgusting position that I don't have to worry about anymore. And I like what they have done or haven't done with that roster this season. We were thinking that either OBJ or AB was going to end up as the number one for Jimmy G out in San Francisco, and that didn't materialize. So as soon as that didn't happen to me, that means that George Kittle, again, is going to be the number one receiving threat on his team next year, regardless of who they get in the draft, just because of the development time it takes for rookie wide receivers. So as long as he's going to be the number one, he's definitely going to be number one in my heart. And I actually kind of put him a spot above Zach Ertz for me. I think Kelce is a different beast entirely, but I think there's a tier to be argued about with both George Kittle and Zach Ertz in that tier as number one targets for their respective teams. Now, I would say that Zach Ertz probably takes a bit of a dip for me just because they should have a healthy DeSean Jackson this year. They didn't have Mike Wallace last year, so they weren't able to actually take those deep bombs that they're so accustomed to. So they'll be able to shift some of the target share over to DeSean Jackson. And if they keep Nelson Agholor and have Dallas Goedert, then you have three guys working the intermediate routes, and that's just going to eat into everybody's production at that spot. So for that reason, and just for the increase or the, I guess, the same level of opportunity next season for a guy like George Kittle, I really do think that he's kind of taking that second spot for me. But when you compare him to James Conner at an entirely different position, that's a tough one for me. I just kind of told you what I like about George Kittle. James Conner he's in for so much work. So much work. It's absolutely ridiculous. So people have now associated Pittsburgh with this high-flying, all the pass attempts in the world offense, which is what they did last season, kind of what they've done the last couple of seasons. But going back to 2015, they don't actually even always rank in the top 10 of passing attempts. In fact, it's been going down every year if you look at it from 2019 going back to 2015. I think that they're going to dial it back with the pass attempts with Antonio Brown getting out of town. I do think that they're going to add extra runs to James Conner, add extra carries to James Conner. And I think Jalen Samuels will have a role replacing some of the targets that have left that team with AB going. But I really think the biggest bump in opportunity on that team from the AB situation, from him leaving, is going to be James Conner. As long as he can stay healthy, he and Juju, I think, are going to be the two most valuable pieces on that Pittsburgh team. And I really do think that Conner is a top five running back on volume alone. So that's what I'm looking at with that. And if you're giving me a top five running back versus a top three tight end, I'm going to take the top five running back every time, regardless of league format.
Yeah, samesies. I mean, everything you two just said, pretty much. Yeah. Except you guys seem to be a little higher on Kittle than I am. He had an awesome year last year, but I think whatever rookie they do bring in will right away be effective. Is that a right word? That works. I'll use that.
You can mitigate that with the fact that hopefully he should have an actual NFL starting quarterback this year. So, you know, he didn't necessarily have that last year, and he was still able to
Nick Mullins shade just thrown right out there, all willy-nilly.
CJ beat hard him too. Don't forget about him.
Who?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. There was a question we didn't get to last week that I kind of wanted to talk about. Michael Risher at FF_Rish wants to know, DJ finished 18 as running back 8. Okay, so let's actually use full words. David Johnson finished the 2018 season as the running back 8. What are you thinking for him for this year? What are your guys' feelings on the David Johnsons?
I think it has a lot to do with who that team gets at quarterback. I think if Josh Rosen stays, then it's the same old, same old. I really don't think that enough has changed beyond Cliff Kingsbury to really say that, you know, I feel confident in investing in Arizona's offense. But if they have a guy like Kyler Murray, who's going to threaten the edge of the defense and make inside lanes even more open for David Johnson, even though he doesn't necessarily run the inside lanes as well as he does run on the edges, that's just going to make it so much easier for him to produce just because the defense has to account for another threat out of the backfield. So if Kyler Murray comes into Arizona, then for me, the price of everybody on the Arizona team should be skyrocketing. But if we're going to stick with the guy out of UCLA, then I think that we've kind of seen what we can expect. Now, an incremental increase, of course, that's definitely likely. That's what you want out of a guy like Cliff Kingsbury. But Rome wasn't built in a day, and I do think it's going to take some time for his team to really settle in.
All right. David Johnson has an ADP of 18, which is running back 10. And last year was atrocious for many, many, many reasons. So don't you feel good at a floor of running back 8? Especially buying him as running back 10?
I do. Absolutely. Especially if... So here's the thing. I don't know necessarily if they don't draft Murray. I don't know... I'm a lot less certain about that.
Because Kingsbury's being brought in to up that offense, whether it's with Rosen or with Kyler Murray. Wow.
But yeah, but up that offense.
Okay, so yes, the ceilings are absolutely different. I'll give you that. But again, a floor of running back eight, and you got to assume the guy they're bringing in to quote unquote save their offense isn't an idiot like Mike McCoy, who's going to run David Johnson into the back of his center.
But here's
times a game.
So here's my problem with that. You're saying floor of running back eight, and I don't think that's the floor for him. I mean, I don't think his floor is RB 25 or 20, but I don't know that eight is the number. I mean, he was eight last year, but you got Nick Chubb, you got Cook, Dalvin Cook will be up there. You know, there are several. You got James Conner that could
Aaron
jump
Jones.
Up.
People are forgetting.
You know, right? I mean, Aaron Jones is out there now. That's a situation that makes me a little bit nervous too. But but
I don't care what the code says.
You know, Kerryon is out there. You know, so there's a lot of these backs, and I don't see anybody in front of him moving out. I mean, Barkley, McCaffrey, Elliott, Kamara, Gurley, you know, Mixon, those guys are all still going to be up there. So
you skip somebody right there.
Zeke?
No, I did.
You're reading down the list and skipped over Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, Melvin Gordon.
I wasn't sure if that was on purpose or
not. No, it wasn't. I just.
All right, I was super trying to call you out.
Absolutely.
It didn't work. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely wasn't on purpose. No, but those guys, I mean, those guys, you know, I mean, the running back position is a little volatile. So, yes, there are guys that are going to move up and down, but DJ can do the same. I mean, I don't think that saying DJ at RB8 is I don't know that his floor with Josh Rosen at quarterback. Now, here's what I'd say. You ask a question. So I'm going to answer a question. What is his upside? If Murray comes in there and Cliff Kingsbury is able to run the offense that he wants to run with Murray at the helm, RB4?
It's RB1 for me. If Kyler Murray is starting at quarterback, if you have a Lamar Jackson type situation
in his rookie season,
pass a running quarterback with a guy as dangerous as him would be damn near unstoppable.
See, I love this because you're sort of asking Brian to agree that someone can finish over Baquon.
Lots of people
the smile on his face.
Saquon Barkley. I love Saquon Barkley. In my league of record, Saquon Barkley basically turned my entire team around. I had an orphan that I had for a couple of seasons. We're absolutely terrible. We went 1-11 two seasons ago with Saquon Barkley. We turned that from 1-11 to 10-3. So I love Saquon Barkley. But Saquon Barkley is literally going to be facing the entire NFL, the entire National Football League every time he takes a carry. There's nothing there for him. We have an offensive line that, even with the addition of Zeitler, probably still isn't quite near where it needs to be. There's no threats on the outside downfield. So, we're going to say that, you know, Golden Tate is added talent at wide receiver, but he doesn't change anything that team has. So there's real no reason to back off anybody in New York, at least with Odell. You can at least get one side of the coverage a little backed off, one side of the coverage maybe doubling Odell. But with nobody to focus on him, Saquon Barkley is just going to be having to dodge bullets every carry of his entire 2019 season. And while I fully think he's capable of doing so, I wouldn't be surprised if it takes him longer to get to his eventual, number one spot for several years when that team gets his act together. But as currently constructed, I do think that there is some danger that we maybe see some drop off from Saquon, that maybe he's somewhere towards the lower end of the, you know, RB5 conversation.
I love that, like, the disastrous side of Saquon Barkley is the lower side of running back five.
It is. That tells you something. That tells you all you need to know.
Like, I'm like, oh my God, is he going to call him a low-end RB1? Is he going to – oh, never mind.
Yeah, no. No, I'm not getting crazy. He is the most talented running back in the NFL in one of the NFL's worst situations.
I was about to say, Brian is not great with technology, but he would find a way to hack my computer to get control of this Hangout.
Start muting. See ya. No, you know, it's funny. I mean, my Saquon Barkley, my affection for Saquon is very well documented on the show and elsewhere. I think Eitan makes a great point. You know, especially this season with either Eli Manning or a rookie quarterback, you know, and no, you know, they're going to have to address the wide receiver position again. I mean, Golden Tate doesn't really do a lot for me there. I mean, that's, I just don't, you know, I don't know, but I think Eitan makes a great point. I think Saquon will likely take, I mean, he was unbelievable this year as a rookie. I mean, it was just insane what he did. He's likely to take a step back from that. And I think, you know, the same conversation we were having
about
Amari,
his career.
Well, the same conversation that we were having about Amari Cooper and how that will make people view him. I'm extremely excited about that.
Ooh, Saquon Barkley buying season.
Oh my God. I mean, I will buy him everywhere.
Oh, if he ever takes
everywhere.
A different team. Yeah. I don't care. I don't care what you want. You can have my team for Saquon Barkley.
Yeah. I mean, I just, and I think, you know, and I also agree obviously with the fact that I think long-term here, barring injury, or just being totally run into the ground, that's, you know, the other thing that scares me a little bit. But I think Saquon is going to be one of the greats. I really do. I've been saying it since day one. You know, I hear him talk too. He was at Penn State's pro day last week, and they were interviewing him, and he talks about when he was talking about Penn State specifically in the interview, and then he switched to the NFL, and they said differences in terms of different, you know, he was talking about the competitiveness in the guys that were trying to make it into the league as rookies, you know, or this upcoming class. And he said, that's something I don't see at the next level. I don't see as many guys that want it as bad as the guys that want it when they're coming out of school. Cause when they're coming out of school, it's like the whole thing is in front of them. And he said, so to me, that was telling too, like there are guys in the league, probably on his team, that he's pissed about not wanting it, you know, and he's a guy that is just really driven. So, you know, I think he long term he's going to be he's my RB1 for the next decade, barring injury. You know, I would imagine. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens, but
5 years, he's still a running back.
Yeah. Good point. Nice. Good point. But all right, but no, I think the step back is absolutely a legit concern there. All right. So.
Don't we started late. For us.
I don't give a shit if you're tired.
I am tired.
You're freaking episode. Every episode. I'm tired. Drink an energy drink. They're everywhere. Five-hour energy. It's this big.
You got to send them a box. So, everyone, if you're listening,
best
way to support Trade Addicts, send Dynasty Outhouse
an
entire container. Entire box of 5 hour energy.
I will post his address later on Twitter for everyone.
I think I did that once by accident already anyway.
I can't imagine the shit you would get in the mail.
Oh my God. Especially with a name like Outhouse. I really don't want to know. All right. But before we do go, since we are gracious hosts, Eitan, pick something that's still on the show sheet to talk about. Whether it's a question or a trade, you go for it.
Let's see. What is still here? We can talk about a really, really sad topic.
We can't end with sadness.
I mean, Quincy Enunwa, that's kind of ending with sadness, right? Jameson Crowder,
my boy.
He's the new slot receiver in town, and Sam, my co-host on Dynasty Diagnostic, doesn't seem to think that this will greatly affect Enunwa's opportunities, but I think this is the death knell for a guy that was just signed to a contract, so I don't know what the hell the New York Jets are doing, because he was probably the best offensive player on the team anyway, and they just replaced him. But, I mean, besides Bell, the pre-Bell, best offensive player, pre-Bell. But yeah, I mean, his target share isn't going to be the same. His opportunity ratio isn't going to be the same. He's going to see a higher A dot, so he's going to be getting less accurate targets from Sam Darnold, most likely. And his receiver success rate goes down something like 8 percentage points moving out of the slot. So I really do think that if you had Love for Quincy Enunwa, if you could still get something for Quincy Enunwa, that might be something that I would be exploring right now. And the way I would phrase it is, hey, this guy just got signed to a contract. Last year, Tyler Lockett was signed to a contract. Look what happened. Do the same thing here and just hope that that person isn't paying attention. But I kind of want to start playing taps for Quincy Enunwa's value, unfortunately.
I bought 3 shares before free agency started.
I'd be there with you. If I could have, I would have done the same thing. So I understand it. Free agency, man, kills people.
And the thing is, like, I loved Crowder. I wanted him to go somewhere he would get used. But in the words of, oh, man. Nope, not going to think of the character's name. The woman in The Matrix that wore all white. Not like these. Not like this.
Not Trinity. I don't know.
Not Cypher.
All you people in your pop culture, I'm telling you, like, everybody on Twitter knows every character from every movie since, like, 1854. Did they even have cinema in 1854? It's ridiculous. I can't tell you who played anything in any movie.
Switch.
I am 99.9% with you. I literally know nothing about pop culture. In fact, one of my first jobs was to actually be a PA for a theater group, and I was around just a bunch of people that, you know, were obviously ingrained in pop culture, and they started talking about what was happening on TMZ, what the newest gossip was, and I was like deer in headlights the entire time.
Eitan.
Yes.
Remind me where you are.
I am in Los Angeles.
L.A.
L.A. Cali.
See?
Yeah, see, I'm talking about being tired, and he's going to start his evening.
I am. I'm hyped up. I'll be up. I mean, Ad House knows I don't sleep anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
This dude is always in the group chat. It doesn't matter when. 3 a.m. Easter time, he's in the group chat. Makes a little bit of sense. Maybe just, you know, stays up late. 6 a.m, he's still in the group chat. I get to work 8 a.m, still in the group chat. Does not sleep.
Sleeping is not a thing I do. I'll sleep when, I don't know. I won't sleep when I'm dead. I'll be dead. I don't know why that's a saying. It shouldn't be a saying. Anyway, we've got to cut off.
That just killed the end of the show, speaking of.
You what?
I said you killed the end of the show.
Oh, I liked it. I like this ending. At least it wasn't you saying, guys, I'm tired. I'm going to bed. You're going to say it anyways, aren't you?
I am going to bed.
I'm just giving you a hard time anyways.
I know. And you had to freaking message me to let me know that because you're too much of a freaking nice guy.
Well, I've been you're freaking joking, Brian. Tonight. Oh, hell.
All right. Well, before we do head out, Eitan, remind all of these wonderful people who no doubt love you more than they did before who you are, what you do, where they could find it.
You can find everything I'm working at or working with at the Dynasty Diagnostic on Twitter at Dyno, D-Y-N-O, Diagnostic. That's where you can find the podcast. I'll also post a lot of my articles up there, and you'll be seeing some more good stuff. Hopefully we'll have a listener league at some point. I don't know when. This might have to take a year to materialize, but I will have a listener league at some point, so definitely stay tuned if you're interested in that. And I really just am thankful for the outpouring of support from the fantasy community in starting this whole ordeal. I had listened to podcasts for a very long time and finally wanted to get into it, so I'm glad that we were able to actually create a product that it seems like some people like. So I guess that's a good thing.
Your Twitter handle is?
My Twitter handle, you're just going to have to prompt me on everything here. I'm completely unprepared. See, when I don't have a sheet in front of me, I just don't know what I'm doing with my life. This is why my show sheets are so ridiculous. My Twitter handle is Eitan Mosia. It is actually spelled E TAN instead of A like you thought it was. So make sure you go ahead and follow me at Eitan Mosia on Twitter.
Awesome. Oh, and this is more important than leaving. I just got a Twitter question. Sean Lanigan at Lanny1925. When you make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, what is your ratio of peanut butter to jelly? Are you more jelly or more peanut butter or even?
Team peanut butter.
You're a monster.
Do you even need the jelly?
Monster. Oh my God.
You're not going to eat a jelly.
My girlfriend doesn't even like peanut butter and jellies, and I don't know what's wrong with the world.
Hey, do you ever make a jelly sandwich? No.
No, no, that'd be disgusting.
You ever make just a peanut butter sandwich?
No.
Oh, I do.
At least a peanut butter.
Like, I make like a peanut butter and banana sandwich.
There we go. Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. At least peanut butter banana if you're just going to go peanut butter.
See, I go peanut butter and jelly. I actually go a little heavier on the jelly because the peanut butter I eat is so like sugar based that it's so, you know, ever present that you need the jelly to A, reduce the mouth stickiness, and to make sure you still taste the jelly.
Yeah, you need at least 50% jelly, if not more.
Peanut butter plantain sandwich.
I can plantain.
Fried plantains. Oh, man. Well, I was losing my... when you were talking about plantains.
Oh, my God. Fried plantains are the best thing ever.
Ever.
I still need that recipe.
Like, oh, man. Like,
you just fry them in a frying pan.
The word plantain.
Like, throw some oil in there.
So throw some oil in there. Get it to, you know, same temperature you'd use to fry anything. And then, yeah, just toss them in there. Give them, I don't know, they brown pretty quickly. Flip them over once, wait for that side to brown, and then toss them aside, and you're good to go. That's honestly all you need. If you have like some powdered sugar or anything else that you want to put on them, that's great. But that just fry.
Freaking delicious powdered sugar. Oh.
It's so good. They're so good they're in so many cultures too. I'm Nigerian, so it's like it's a culture thing for me. I've had it since I was a kid, but I mean, it's also prevalent in the Filipino culture. It's also prevalent in Spanish culture. Everybody uses plantains because they're freaking delicious.
Yeah. My last job, there was a lot of Hispanic restaurants around. So, oh man, such good food.
Yeah. Platanos.
So, the tostones, all the tostones. All right. Now my stomach is grumbling and I'm exhausted. I'm a mess right now. You guys are the worst and the best. I'm very conflicted.
Love you, Adams.
Oh my goodness.
On that note, tradeaddictspod.storeenvy.com. Buy some stuff. I just bought some more stuff because I posted that picture of my son and I in the matching shirts, and my daughter got angry that she didn't have one also. So I can't just buy one thing. So what else do we do? Patreon.com/tradeaddictspod. We appreciate anything you ever could even imagine giving us, even if you just think about it, that makes us feel pretty good. Otherwise, Brian's 2QB and Superflex rankings on DynastyLeagueFootball.com. Good night, Brian.
Night, Outhouse.
Night, Eitan.
Good night, Outhouse.
Night, Eitan.
Adios, Brian.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addicts Podcast. You can follow the pod on Twitter at Trade Addicts Pod. Follow our hosts at Zion House and at Brian Hart. Please remember to subscribe and rate and review.